Hello, everyone. Welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. I am your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me at Spooky Milk on Twitter and elsewhere. I am not going to say a lot for this opening because we had 10 emails this week. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. You can, and most of you did. We got 10 emails. We're going to get through them. Some of them are purely recaps of the show, and I'll see if we can glean anything out of those. Otherwise, we love the questions. Some of these longer form call-outs of the show, in the future we'll just see what we can pull out of them. But yeah, give us some quick questions and stuff like that. Those are that's the stuff we like to go on and on about on this show. So let me go and say hi to the other two guys. Tom, go ahead.
Yep, at Tom Staup on Twitter. I do the NXT tapings reports, and if you caught me in the crowd looking really confused at the beginning of tonight's show, that's because they had just announced the title versus title match happening later, and I was still processing it.
All right, and we also have Justin James.
I'm Justin James. You can find me on Twitter at Justin_M_James.
All right, and our absent brother, Harley R. Padgett, you can find him right now on the Mae Young Classic podcast that he's doing every week. I'm anxious to see the next hour of that, but we'll have to wait until after we're done with this podcast. So let's dive into a show that, you know, had some going on, but mostly a show of ours that's going to be emails. So main event, Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair, I think kind of a fitting end to this match, just because this match hadn't gotten a lot of build up yet, and I would think that a match between two characters this important would be kind of a big deal. Obviously, Bianca's not going to stop her momentum at this point, but Nikki does absorb a lot of losses. For instance, when the fans were chanting "Nikki's going to kill you," and I'm like, "Where is the proof of that? Like, she doesn't win all that often
ever.
Like,
ever.
She's ever. It's like, she might.
She wins number one contender matches.
Right. Yeah, she wins multi woman number
and
one
only
contender matches.
Champion.
Yeah, and then she loses the title match, and then she goes away, so she doesn't have to take any defeats, but they don't have anything to build her up for. Strange what they do with Nikki.
So, I think her last win was when Asuka was champion.
I don't know. I meant to look it up, and I didn't. This is where Harley comes up big, because he pulls up that kind of thing. And maybe I'll pull that up. But anyway, as a main event, Justin, go ahead and take this one.
You know what? I like this match because I didn't like this match in some aspects. I saw Bianca Belair a little bit on the ropes for a moment, but I liked how they showed her kind of like get through it. And it's in line with that package she did, the Who is Bianca Belair package, where she talks about not taking things seriously and still being the top and succeeding. And in this case, she didn't take Cross seriously, and then she did, and she got nasty, and I liked it. I didn't like the very beginning of the match where Cross is playing this comedy bits and Bianca's like, you know, falling backwards. Come on, nobody falls backwards like that unless they're trying to fall backwards. It's so obviously fake. I can't stand that. Even my 11-year-old son is like, he's asking me pointed questions like, it's bad enough that he's asking me how they know what happened on the show before the show plays. He thinks it's live. Like, that's bad enough. But then, to make it worse, is now asking me questions like, how is Nikki Cross like acting like this and she's not in jail?
Yeah, that is a good question. And like you were saying earlier, it's easier to believe. And we got it was an email that I read. It's a little bit easier to buy Nikki as somebody who was kind of being held in check by Eric Young. And so that was easier to buy. And her character is kind of rudderless right now, which is one of the reasons I think that she's off TV. We did get an email that was specifically about the women. Let me see if I'm right about which one that is. OK, yes, this is an email from Paul Leonard. My first thought is, Wouldn't the Forgotten Sons promo have been better before they had their first televised match last week? I've already gotten tired of these investigation segments. Like, why haven't they done these for other people that have gotten attacked? As for the one today, yeah, KO is going to get KO'd by Matt Riddle, right? That's what that has to be leading to. I am more convinced now than ever Nikki Cross needs to drop the crazy gimmick, or tone it down, or just go up to main roster and join Sanity again. When she was with them, I just assumed Eric Young kept them in line and stuff, without a person with her. Well, it has been put on this show before. How does she function in daily life? I thought they would do something like that with Dakota Kai. Kai helps her become semi-normal. She helps Kai become crazy enough to beat Shayna, but I was wrong on that. Speaking of the women, who do you guys see facing Kairi Sane at Evolution? My first thought was Shayna, but then I thought they would have Shayna's first match in front of the more casual WWE audience be a loss. Or do you see her winning so they can have her and Ronda celebrate together at the end of the night? In answer to that one, I say that I absolutely think it will be Shayna, and I don't know if it'll matter who wins and loses this match. I think they are probably just going to try to load the heck out of this pay-per-view, it being the first one of its kind. I don't know who's going to win that, but I definitely feel you on Nikki. Get her back in Sanity or figure out what to do. Because she's crossed over into comedy. I mean, the first half of this match was definitely comedy, and that's fine. You had a clash of styles in there, and it could be fun, but I don't know that... I mean, Nikki, outside of title matches right now, is just a very silly character, and I just don't know... I feel like she had enough drawing power that is kind of an unfortunate thing that has happened. Tom, what do you think of all this?
Well, real quick, this was one of the loudest fan contests, so that's probably where those chants were coming from, less for the match and more for the free T-shirt. We've been saying this for a long time about Nikki, but I am predicting that she will only be in NXT for one more set of tapings, and this is why I'm glad that it wasn't thrown to me when we were talking about the same subject last week, because I didn't want to sort of tip my hat as far as the result of this match. I do agree that it's going to be Shayna reenacting her rematch clause at Evolution. I don't think it's going to be a big deal that she's going to lose. That's also how she was introduced to us in NXT. Yeah, I mean, she was winning Mae Young Classic matches and exhibition matches and whatnot, but she lost the Mae Young Classic finals. She lost her first match against Ember Moon for the title, and she's still the Shayna we know today. She's very strong in defeat. And after Evolution, if/when she shows up on Raw, Michael Cole and Renee Young and Corey Graves can just talk about how amazing Evolution was, how she's friends with Ronda, and those will be their talking points. They won't bring up the fact that she lost, so I don't think that'll be a big deal. But moving on from that, I kind of feel about tonight's main event the same way I felt about last week's main event, in that it's unofficially, they're not saying it, but it's kind of a number one contenders match. And because it went to a no contest, I'm thinking we're probably going to get a triple threat at TakeOver, and this next set of tapings may build up to that.
All right, I did look it up. Nikki Cross in 2018, before the match tonight, had 3 wins and 2 losses. That is her entire 2018 TV output, I believe, including TakeOver. I typically find my stuff on Darren's win-loss records. A guy named Darren Bongiovanni. I'll throw him a little bit of a I'll just pimp him out here a lot because I use his. He seems to be right on top of it, and he tweets while he's updating his spreadsheets. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, 3-2 was her very light workload of a record on TV this year. So there you go. And Bianca, has not lost.
And yeah, as a percentage, that may be better than her 2017.
It probably is, yeah. 60% win percentage in the women's division in NXT. I mean, that puts you in like the top 10-15%. So.
And it's just odd because we've had conversations before about at least I know I was coming from a position of she could, if they really put a lot behind her, she could be extremely popular. She could be NXT's next, or at a time I thought she could be NXT's next Bayley in terms of a female wrestler with that level of popularity. And they just sort of, I don't know about pumped the brakes. They just stopped putting her out there as much and involving her in major storylines. And you know what? The comedy thing actually works for me. I know, you know, with the PW Torch audience and particularly on this show, we tend not to be as much of a fan of the way she's been doing that for just, but just for me personally, I've been really enjoying her particular brand of comedy. And I like it when it does have people like Regal and Bianca to play off of. So that's the main reason why I liked this match. Although for Bianca's part of it, I will say that this was, I mean, it's showing more of that next level that she does need to go to. Cause yeah, undefeated 8-0 or whatever it is. But they've all sort of been, if not easy wins, just, you know what you're getting from a Bianca Belair match, which is not a bad thing, but there's never been a moment where she really has to buckle down and go to the next level. And she started to do that tonight when she had a bit more of an even match with Cross.
So but I'm like, that's kind of the point with her.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah. And I think that this will lead to another match. I know that a lot of fans will wring their hands over a non-finish like this, but NXT doesn't give us many non-finishes, and when they do, there's a reason, and they're building towards something. So I believe that we'll see this blown off in a big way, more than likely. Go ahead.
The non-finish is something that I just wanted to kind of raise as a concern, because our expectation was that next week we'd see a non-finish to Dunn and Ricochet.
That's true.
Likely a double countout. And going to the double countout, well, twice in one taping is just so risky.
I think somebody will win that match, but I don't think that it will be a pinfall or a submission. I think maybe we'll see, I don't know. I'm guessing Cole gets involved. That makes the most sense to me, given the stuff that's going on. And then
yeah, we're just
some kind of three-way convoluted thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just that because, you know, to me the most sensible approach was the double count out, but now it looks like they're going to have to go to the Undisputed Era no contest ending.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah, there you go. That was our main event. Not anything more that I don't want to stick around on any one given match. So let's go to the opening match, which was Cesar Bononi and Adrian Jaoud, who, as a tag team, have zero wins, against Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, who also have zero wins as a tag team. So this was a match. Somebody finally getting off the schneid. Lorcan and Burch win. I listened for it in the commentary too, just to see if they would actually mention that. But I think that's one of those things that you're not supposed to notice. And indeed, I don't know if I would notice if I hadn't paid so much attention to win-loss records. But this is literally the first time this team has ever won on TV. So Lorcan and Burch go over Bononi and Jaoud. I assume that they will get another tag team match at some point. I have two questions about tag teams in general, so I'm going to do two of these emails here. First of all, I'm going to do one from Brian Alston. Hello, friends. Unfortunately working, so I can't watch NXT live, but that won't stop me from asking a question. Last week, you were talking about the Mighty and sometimes confusing Shane Thorne with Nick Miller. Can you name some other teams where you've confused their names? One team it took me a while was the Smoking Guns. Jimmy Uso used to wear face paint on right side of his face. Jimmy has five letters. Right has five letters. I used to watch WWF Greatest Tag Teams VHS tape and could tell Appa from Sika, but can't now. In TNA, my method for the Young Bucks Generation Me was Max looked like Matt Hardy. Jeremy looked like Jeff Hardy. My method for Dash and Dawson. Dash has four letters. Bald has four letters. Dawson is the ball. And and Dash is the bald one. He actually typed Dawson is the bald one, but I know that's not what he meant to say. Yes, I see a psychiatrist, or do I? So yeah, I know that I've had issues with tag teams like that, where they weren't pushed in any meaningful way. Like you'd see them, and I wouldn't. I don't know. It was never ones that looked somewhat alike. I did the same thing with the side of the face paint with Jimmy and Jay. I don't know. I'm sure there's another team that I've I'm trying to go back and think of some WCW teams. I know Rage and Chaos, if, for those of you who go back to Kenny Chaos and whatever his partner's name was, those guys, I never bothered to learn because I knew there was never going to be any wins. At first, I couldn't tell Dozovich from Tucker Knight because I couldn't get myself engaged in their matches. Now I don't have that issue at all anymore, but that was something that happened then. But yeah, any teams that have thrown you guys other than the Mighty?
Authors of Pain.
I guess I haven't had any with them either, but...
Yeah, see, like, the Usos were easy for me because one had tattoos and one didn't. The Ely brothers are tough because they're twins and neither of them have tattoos or other identifying post-birth body modifications.
Yep.
Like, they have the exact same haircut. The Singh brothers threw me for a while. There are a couple appearances. Basically, they have to have just – but Authors of Pain, they just look very similar. And yeah, one's got tattoos and the other doesn't, but they're mostly like covered by the shirt or something.
Yep.
And yeah, they have such lame names. Aikman Razar.
It just reminds me of the Ninja Turtles, the Secret of the Ooze bad guys. you know what I'm talking about.
I don't Kevin remember Nash. Which ones they used on Secret of the Ooze. Secret of the Ooze was three, right? So Kevin Nash.
Yeah, they made Kevin Nash as Shredder.
They made up their own ones. They weren't based on any prior characters. They were kind of like
There's like
royalty free versions of Bebop and Rocksteady.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. They used why do the movie if you're whatever.
The current ones that confuse me are Hanson and Rowe. I'm sure I'll get that straight eventually. I always try to say like. I always go to Sarah Logan's Instagram to figure it out because she's engaged to one of them. And that's how I figure that out. But, you know, it's funny with Nick Miller and Shane Thorne. I actually realized as I looked into it further after recording last week, I don't get them mixed up. I just had their names backwards. So I know I can tell them apart. I just had their names wrong.
Okay.
And it wasn't until last week's episode where they only showed one on the screen and distinctly said his name that I was like, oh, I had it wrong.
I always have all their boots, but now they took their initials off the boots. It annoys me.
Yeah, they do so many little tweaks like that. Alston did mean Dawson is the bald one, and I think I might understand why, because I have little systems like that too. But it's the four-letter thing, and I think I have little systems like that, too, where I'll come up with a little reminder like that, like Dash is four letters, bald is four letters, but Dawson is the bald one because I'm always wrong. it's like not trusting myself.
Okay.
But for me, I still don't know which one is Axe and which one is Smash.
Really?
Yeah, I know which one is Crush, though. Everybody knows which one is Crush. What's that?
I said the dead
animal and hawk.
Just go.
Well, no, that's who I was going to. It's embarrassing, but I always have to look up which one was animal and which one is hawk.
Wow.
So those are my two. I know.
Early on in their careers, Hawk was the one that was a really good wrestler, and later on in their careers, Hawk was the really deteriorated one. So you can't even just pull a match out of time and know from their talent level because Hawk was way ahead and way behind at different times. So yeah.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Interesting question. I know that has thrown me at times. I'm just trying to – I'll try to think if there's any more before next week's show. So This is Chris Fielder. Hey, guys. Tonight seemed like a pretty good show overall. Got a couple of points and questions for you. I really like Lorcan and Burke as Birch as a tag team. I honestly can say I didn't at first, but they've grown on me. The only thing I think that's missing is a team name. I heard the crowd chanting 1-2. That sounds okay to me. What do you guys think? Also, Cesar Bononi has one of the best porn stashes I've seen in a while. So, Ciampa always harped on not having music or any WWE t-shirts. Although I love the new music, why do you guys think he reconsidered? Or do you think it was Triple H or other NXT brass that forced him to do it? Also, Ciampa has to be one of the best heels in a very long time. Loved his promo tonight. Lastly, seems like it's a given now it's going to be Ono and Riddle. I can't wait for that. Thanks as always, guys, and I wanted to say your kind words last week meant a lot more than you will ever know. I really appreciate it. Chris Fielder, baby, truth or consequences, New Mexico. Okay, so, yeah, there was a little about Lorcan and Birch there. And I like him, too. I did like him at first, but I also was somewhat, like, I knew Lorcan from before when he was Biff Busick, and I had seen him work, and I knew he worked stiff, and that's what I'm really into. So, that was cool. As far as Ciampa's music, I think that is a good question, and we will get to that. But, yeah, anything, we haven't really thrown to you guys about the tag team match itself, Lorcan and Birch here, and what you think this might mean for where they're headed and when. Tom, any insight on that?
NXT UK.
So this is just to build them up for that lateral move where they can job to a new set of guys.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't see them doing anything of real significance, you know, for the remainder of their time in NXT, lest it be, teaming with Tyler Bate again or teaming with Pete Dunne again. To help them out and be their fall guys.
And the announcers made it seem like they've got their sights set on the tag titles. And I was like, do they really? Like, do they still? I had no idea. Anything else on this opener, Justin?
I mean, their post-match promo after losing it sounded like they were back in the chase already. I was stunned to see Danny Burch laying on top of somebody while the ref counted to three and not underneath somebody. That was a little bit surprising.
Yep.
That was a first. Yeah, I think this is the first time I've ever seen Danny Burch pick up a win. And also, I take great objection to the phrase porn stash with reference to Cesar Bononi's facial hair. It was a Gomez Adams stash.
Oh, I see.
Because that's what my report says. My report says Gomez Adams. If you disagree with it, you disagree with my report.
I see.
I'm not as much of a facial hair connoisseur, but I did notice that, or in direct relation to Fielder's email, that is definitely not a porn stash. And yeah, if it Joey does Ryan qualify nowadays, we just definitely there you go.
That's like the beta male porn stash of porn. It's a Gomez Adams mustache.
I want to say this is the third time we've seen Birch pin somebody, even though it is definitely Lorcan and Birch as a two-man tag. It's their first win, but I think this is the third time we've seen him pin someone.
Once in a six-man, and then once against Lorcan.
Right.
Yeah.
I like this tag team, but my Birch's wins come so infrequently that if I forget the most recent one, that's like me forgetting, you know, what I got my kid for his birthday 2 years ago. You know, it's like, yeah. I can be forgiven.
It's to be expected. Yep. Okay, let's go to Tommaso.
He's not his forgotten pins.
All right,
he can make a vignette about that, his forgotten pins.
All right, we'll go to Tommaso Ciampa. He was in two early bits today. First, he had his entrance and did his in-ring promo with music. I got mixed emotions on that because it was a very cool thing that he did, but it's decent music too, and I think it fits him. So, I don't know. What are you going to do? I knew it wouldn't last forever. I kind of wish it had, but I knew it wasn't going to. Then we had him in a very different bit along with Heavy Machinery. So, to me, this was a really, really weird pairing up of these two guys. I know they're both wrestlers. I know they're both on the same show and the same brand, but you take guys who have been purely doing poo jokes and, like, infantile stuff in backstage, and then a character who is steeply built in this very dark version of reality. It was like, I don't know, it was like seeing it was like seeing Twilight Sparkle meet The Undertaker. It's like they're both both characters make sense in their own world, but like I don't necessarily want to see them interact because that doesn't make sense for either one. I don't know. And maybe a decent-ish singles match will come out of this. It looks like we're going to get one next week or the week after. I don't know if they were more specific on that, but a very weird... I don't know. Maybe it didn't throw you guys as much. Tom, what did you think about the two Ciampa segments?
Well, if WWE had a partnership with Hasbro instead of Hanna-Barbera, I would definitely watch that crossover between
Sparkle and The Undertaker.
Yeah. And don't get me started on the Hanna-Barbera movies, because I could do a whole podcast on just those. Wow. But yeah, it's actually a pretty interesting subject, but maybe I'm the only person who feels that way. Anyway, I'm forced myself to move past that because I'll talk too long about it. And now I'll talk too long about this. it felt like they were building up to a house show match, because it does seem like such an odd pairing. And I mean, the last house show I went to, yeah, Heavy Machinery was in the main event because they're happy baby faces who are going to go slap hands with with all the kids in the front row after they inevitably win, or at least get a beat down after whatever happens, or give a beat down, as it were. So, yeah, it's odd. I mean, there's only one episode left in this set of tapings that they're currently going through, and this was Ciampa's only appearance out in front of the crowd. Since they are already advertising what the main event is for next week, that shouldn't be like discounting any potential developments that anybody might be thinking of to reveal that. So yeah, the match, assuming that it's going to occur on TV, has not happened yet. It's odd, but I guess I'm for it. I don't know what else to make of that. As far as Ciampa's new entrance, it's definitely we didn't know he was about to come out at the taping, so you're just like, whoa, is this going to be Matt Riddle? Is this somebody else getting new music? Who is it? And then you see Ciampa's name on the screen, and it does feel like, maybe it's just because I was sitting in a particular section of the crowd that was very openly supporting Ciampa, myself included. I know I'm horrible. It seemed like a betrayal, I guess, which is weird to say about such a heel character. But when he explained why, and that it's so he doesn't have to listen to us booing him anymore or shouting things at him anymore, I absolutely loved it, and I was completely sold. And it's just another layer on this awesome heel act that he has crafted. And talking to the belt. And, mentioning, if he says something that's just pure gold on Twitter, he'll make sure that he mentions it in a promo as well, just to make sure it's on the record. Like the, if I had attacked Alistair, I would take credit for it. It was just, I'm for it. I think it's an excellent development for him. And I, Fielder asked about, like with WWE making him do it or whatever it is. And, I agree with you, Kelly, that it was just inevitable. It was going to go this way. Eventually they're like, okay, this was cool for a while, but you kind of need entrance music. Cause that's how we do things around here, and you're popular. So you kind of need a t-shirt, cause that's how we do things around here. Yep. So.
All right. And then Justin on all the Ciampa bits, I know you have, a difficult and complicated relationship with Heavy Machinery.
I don't think that the passion I feel for them could be complicated, Kelly. I mean, I'm a fan.
I know you're a fan, but you've had your
I'm a fan.
Your issues in the last week or two.
I mean, Dozer had his issues, and it was caused by some Waffle House coffee.
Right. Okay.
So, I'll say this. This promo did more to turn me off to Heavy Machinery than anything else. It wasn't even Ciampa getting involved. It was just the idiocy. I mean, Dozovic came off as like what's his name in Scooby Doo, the stoner, not the dog, Shaggy. The other stuff, Shaggy thing. I always want to call him Scrappy, but Scrappy Doo's the idiot little dog that they invented
to yeah. ruin the show even more.
Thankfully, he is not in the WWE crossover movies.
Thankfully. He just reminded me of Shaggy. He's like, hey, Tucky, we're going to solve the mystery. We're going to rip off the mask at the end. It's going to be Ciampa, who's also the owner of the hotel.
Right. Zoinks, Tucky, we got to get out of here, like now.
Zoinks! Yeah, it was so bad. And normally I'm a fan of these two. Like when they're sitting around that one where they're sitting around a grill, grilling up some sausages. That was cool. You know, they got their shirts off and they're like manly men grilling.
Just men doing stuff. Yep. Yeah, that worked. That was stuff. My favorite thing they did too.
And now it's like, hey, Tucky, we're going to solve the whodunit. And it was so dumb. And then Ciampa comes in and it just devalues Ciampa. In terms of the music, my reaction was exactly what Tom's was. At first, I was like, who has new music? And I thought it was Matt Riddle. And I was like, why in the world did they give Ciampa music? This was his thing. It was working. And then he explained, he's like, I can dig it. But the other thing, too, is that Ciampa has worked harder than any other champion I can think of. And the only other person I can think of who does this as much as Ciampa is Velveteen Dream. To keep himself fresh, every single appearance, something changes. You know, mm-hmm. Ciampa's promos, the way he's carrying his promos, is totally different. The way he does his – everything is different. And this was a logical evolution. He explains, says, I'm doing this to make – you angry. Okay. You're doing it to make me angry. Mission accomplished, because it made me angry.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I think comparing to other champions, just most recently with Alistair and Andrade before him, I think each of them had maybe four or five, Andrade two or three segments where it was just them coming down, and of course Andrade with Zelina, but just coming down, cutting the promo, and going back, and nothing else happened. It was just them, sort of like a mm-hmm. State of the Union of the championship. And we always complained about them on this show, and I think rightfully they were always terrible segments. Yes. And now when Ciampa's the champion comes down, exactly. So this is the first time in a while. And I, as much as I liked Drew McIntyre, his promos weren't great either. He always talked about being a man and stepping up to the man. And it didn't make any sense to me. So,
because you don't know what it's like to be a man and step up to the man, Tom Stapp, very obvious.
Well,
if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man.
I should have a scintillating retort for that.
But you don't.
Right, because, yeah. Anyway, I'm just agreeing that it is fantastic to have a champion who cuts good promos again.
I know. It's nice. Yep. And in fact, that was one of our biggest criticisms of Black. We're like, it's not even that cut a bad promo, but we're like, your character does not need to be cutting promos. Shut your mouth.
And not long promos if he's going to cut them at all. Keep it simple. The best scenes with him, he spoke. Dream. Yeah, he spoke in all his best scenes, but he spoke very little in all his best scenes. We have an email from Jay Sampson. Who do you guys think Ciampa's next title match will be against? Thanks for all the great work that you do. Thanks, Jay Sampson, for writing such a short email, because most of them were very long this week. This is, I would say, a good question. I know that last week or maybe the week before I said I believe that all of the title matches will involve Johnny Gargano until Johnny Gargano is champion. But I also think he could stop off and have one singles match with Aleister Black, and mm-hmm. maybe that will set up this three-way that we know that they wanted to do, and we know that they deserved because they worked up to this triple threat match really, really well. So I would not be surprised if there was one TV match with Black and Ciampa, and then we got this triple threat. But how I feel outside of Aleister Black, I believe every match with the title on the line will involve Gargano until Gargano is champion. Do you guys see anybody else in line for that match?
Yeah, I've got Velveteen Dream penciled in, depending on Aleister Black's status. Mm-hmm. And I don't see Dream officially turning face for it because he's in a position right now where if you want to put him in the title scene without making him champion, you can do that. And we're going into War Games where the title does not have to be the main event. So you can you don't have to sell your whole show on heel.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I didn't even think about the
Dream things. I had Dream on my mind too. I mean, he beat Gargano last week.
Right.
And it was a clean win.
For me, it was just the heel-heel dynamic. I was not thinking about the fact that they wouldn't have to sell the show with it because War Games will do that.
You can sell a show on Dream's back, and it doesn't matter heel-heel dynamic. It doesn't even matter. His status is ambiguous as his character, right? I mean, it's all part of the same package. He's so fluid with heel versus face, and the crowd's going, and a lot of the crowd's going to cheer him no matter what. Yep. So you can throw Dream into any title matchup, and it's going to put butts in seats.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk about the Aleister Black saga. This to me has gotten a little. I don't know if it's overlong or if it's just because it's silly. I hate the fact that we see the scenes in the back, and it doesn't look like there's been any passage of time. You have Regal and his silent partner. Both sitting there taking notes. I don't know if they've been in the same clothes every week.
They have.
That kind of thing. Okay.
They have.
So they shot all those all at once. And I just want one person to say, why didn't you just talk to us all on the same day? Like, if you were this concerned, why didn't you do this all at once? It makes it look silly that they're waiting a week to do this. This time we got Cassius Ohno. I dare say this was the best of the segments. That's not meant to be high praise. I just think that this segment actually got out some new character stuff, little character touches for Cassius. I loved that he was wearing a Cesaro and Tyson Kidd shirt. I wrote that down. I absolutely love it.
So did I.
Used to team with Cesaro way back as the Kings of Wrestling. But yeah, Cesaro and Kidd shirt. Loved it. What I didn't like it about it was something that I often don't like about characters with losing streak is saying I've been shot to the back of the line and all this stuff. And I'm like, stop talking about your push. Like, you've been losing matches on TV. So to have the character talk about how they're in back of the line really comes off as falsified if they have been losing almost every match they're in. Like, it's them trying to have their cake and eat it too. Like, they can't talk about how they're not thought of in major matches when they literally haven't won any matches to deserve a spot on a takeover. That stuff just drives me crazy. And I don't know if the writers think about that. And if they think about the fact that Cassius Ohno, the character, should have no complaints unless they're trying to heal him up. And even then, do better than that. But anyway, so we've got him kind of continuing this surprisingly slow burn towards heeldom, I would say, and whatever he's going to be doing. I don't know if they're going to pay this off saying that he was the attacker. I can still see it, but I don't know. I guess anything on the entire Black saga, Tom?
I also thought this was one of the better segments yet, just because it was the first time that I felt a legitimate story, at least a hint, at least a little clue, at least a glimmer of something to advance the Aleister Black mystery. Because we had discussed in the past that out of everybody in the video, if we really had to pick out who the suspects were, Cassius Ohno is one of the people where it's like, oh, he's just sort of, oh, I'm just going to sit here with my buddies, Candace and Kyrie. And it sort of made it seem like maybe he was trying to cover for something. Maybe he's trying to look innocent. And this sort of felt like a returning to the scene of the crime kind of thing. Like maybe it's been weighing on him. So because Regal isn't calling him, it's driving him crazy. So he goes in to talk to Regal. And yeah, the conversation didn't go that way, but it was that little moment where Regal was like, I don't have to talk to you. Kyrie just gave you an alibi. And he's like, oh crap. That definitely made me think like, oh, I think he's definitely still on the suspect list. And so still being invested in it for the most part, despite last week's terrible segments in this interrogation sequence thing that we're getting. I'm still into it, and I liked this for that reason. And yeah, I mean, there's no way that Matt Riddle's not coming out and not getting massively cheered. So it was cool to get that confirmation that he's definitely the one that's being lined up for Cassius, or vice versa, as it were. And Cassius is showing a bit of an attitude that I think you're going to get a big pro Riddle crowd whenever that does happen, whether it's at the tapings or at TakeOver.
Right. Yeah. And then, and Justin, anything on the Ono or the Black Saga?
So, you know, I'm firmly on the record as being team whodunit stinks. However, something I realized tonight, and it was due to the Ono segment that I realized, is that what this thing is doing is it's been a fabulous vehicle for storyline advancement. Like Nikki Cross and Belair, how in the world were we going to get to that without that lame interaction in Regal's office? You know, there was just no logical way to set that up. You know, Bianca Belair is just really the uncrowned number one contender. But you want to give her a decent gatekeeper to get through in the form of Nikki Cross. How do you set that match up given Cross's record? You don't.
Oh, yeah. Not only the record, but the fact that they live in totally different worlds. So, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that segment did accomplish what it set out to accomplish.
Yep. So as much as I hate the segments themselves, as much as I hate Dozy and Tucky talking outside the food trucks, hoping to serve up some delicious sausages to Tom and his buddies after the taping. You know, all these things, all these storylines that we're seeing, all these new directions. It's like somebody just like stuck a bunch of cockroaches in a can and shook it up and opened the lid and we're watching them scatter. And that's really fun. This whodunit, it could be a total MacGuffin, and I would be very happy with that. And I usually hate MacGuffins.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that's on that. We've got an email from Kevin Catani, which had a little bit about Ono and Reeves here, and then from last week. And then I'm going to go right into another email because it is somewhat related to this one, which will just seamlessly go into the next segment. So that's all pretty cool. So Kevin Catani, who I think has not emailed us before. Greetings, gents. Firstly, thanks for such a great and engaging show. I look forward to Thursday mornings and the banter you all bring to the table. I love the roundtable format, as each of you has such a great and different POV that I'm often saying to myself, I didn't think of it like that. As I watched this past episode of NXT, I must have been in the zone because I was paying special attention to the entrances of Cassius Ono and Kona Reeves. I am an Ono fan and can't help but wonder if the outfit he's been wearing lately is signifying a hint at potentially joining a popular NXT group that dons yellow and black as their colors, either through them turning on one another or by simple addition. The other thing I noticed was with Kona's entrance, as he did it twice, it stuck out to me. Am I the only one who thinks he's borrowing heavily from Finn's entrance with his stylized arm flail? I certainly get that there are few new unique things wrestlers can do to stand out while getting their character over, but his gesture definitely rang true of Finn. I'm interested in your collective thoughts, provided I'm not being absurd. Thanks in advance. The Professor. P.S. I'm coming for Chris Fielder's crown, baby. Oh boy, I don't know. He's got some making up to do because we hear from Chris a lot. Okay, email from Joe Hill. Hello, chaps. I've been enjoying the podcast for a while and thought I'd drop you a couple of thoughts on Undisputed Era, in particular the membership thereof. First off, almost by fortuitous mistake and happenstance and great in-ring and character work, we've ended up with the potentially one of the great stables in WWE. All four guys in their own ways have found ways to get really over both individually and as a faction. Cool entrance music and some excellent feuds have helped too. There's been talk about splits or a conflict within the group. Personally, I think it's way too soon for that, as there's real money in the UE brand. What I'm interested in are your thoughts on our potential new members of the UE stable. Three people come to mind for me. Number one, Bianca Belair. She has absolutely the right elite athlete background and arrogance to fit right into the dickish mentality of UE. It would broaden the scope of UE by having someone in the women's title picture while at the same time really helping Bianca get her character over. Number two, bro, Matt Riddle. Okay, wait, listen. This is fantasy booking here, but just imagine. The bro thing is definitely a fit with UE. Riddle would be going into the main title picture, which would sow early seeds of tension over leadership of the group that could pay off at a later date. Number three, Zach Gibson, building on the tension with British strong style and a potential branch out into the UK brand. As more of a vicious heel, he'd also be a great occasional Freebird substitute in the tag team title in an OMG not him way. Maybe you can see where this is heading. Just imagine TakeOver New York on WrestleMania weekend, an Undisputed Era clean sweep, every single belt, or even wait till SummerSlam for the clean sweep, setting up a mass call-up for the build to Survivor Series. What do you think? Cheers, fellas. Joe in Manchester, England. P.S. total aside at the end, but I do think they could do with a few TV shows out of the spotlight for now.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Okay, so a lot of stuff there. As far as the people that he throws at us for UE, I actually can see all three of them as choices. Riddle is an odd choice, so I get your preface by saying, wait, listen. But they could either have him start there and then break out and do his face thing, or they could start out as a face, which it seems like they're going to do with Cassius. I do think that he is the object of Cassius's ire. And then maybe have him go later. I don't think that Riddle will end up there, but I definitely see why you thought he'd end up there. For me, Bianca and Zach are actually more interesting choices. So you could have Zach be your UK UE guy or whatever. And when he's at the tapings, he can be a sort of colder, meaner enforcer. Like, he's not going to be silly like the other guys. He's going to be a little more business. And then Bianca, I don't know if I see Bianca in a stable. I think that that character almost certainly has to be a solo act just because she's so cool. I like the idea of getting a female into UE. And having a shot at that title as well. I just don't know if she's the one. And they like the idea too, because they had Tenera Conti in Undisputed Era for like one taping.
Was she even in Undisputed Era, or was it more like,
I don't know,
like, hey, like hey, we put a bug. Yeah, I think it was more like, hey, we put a bug in your ear and said that so and so is talking smack about you, so go beat them up.
Right.
I think it was.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if Undisputed Era even had like an entrance music or a logo yet at that point.
Yeah, and so. it was only because they're trying to beat up Sanity, who had Nikki Cross.
Right.
They have no interest in women's titles.
I agree about Bianca. The woman that came to mind was sort of in the Roderick Strong mold right now, because Undisputed Era has built themselves up as like to be, this isn't something they stayed out outright, but if you watch their matches, they are incredible workers. So you got to be, I feel like you got to be pretty good in the ring to fit in with their group. And Roderick Strong was really stagnating as a babyface, and he wasn't really getting much of a reaction. And I see the same thing going on right now with Dakota Kai. And I feel like if they I feel like that would be a fit, and it would be a way to reinvigorate her character. The Riddle thing is interesting because I, you know, of course he's such a baby face, and I tried because at MLW he was wrestling Shane Strickland, whom I love, so I tried to dislike Riddle, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But calling himself the King of Bros and saying bro all the time is such a heel thing, so I can sort of see that too. The Cassius Ohno thing, the reason he started wearing the robe and wearing those colors, he debuted them at TakeOver Philadelphia, and he and Velveteen Dream were doing a whole Rocky thing, and black and yellow are the colors that Rocky wore in all of his movies. So that's where that comes from. I don't think
he wore it in Rocky 1.
Well, maybe
meatpacking plant robe.
So not all of the movies, but those are the colors that he's known for. You know, those and red, white, and blue, of course. But
that was Apollo Creed, but yeah.
But then he got Creed's trunks.
That's true. That's true. After
Spoilers. Uh oh. But spoilers. If Cassius Ohno were to join Undisputed Era, just in, you know, if I were to imagine that, although I don't really foresee it, I would want him to be in a leadership role. And that sort of carries me over. And as far as, you know, we get questions about Undisputed Era breaking up every week, and I sort of have a different thought on it every week. And I still don't really know what to make of it. But my thought right now is how much of Undisputed Era's popularity is Adam Cole and fans getting to say Adam Cole baby and point at their heads with their thumbs and say boom along with him and everything. And maybe putting somebody like Zach Gibson in the group or another UK guy in the group would be a good move, and they can transition part of it over to NXT UK or move some of it up to their main roster. They probably wouldn't want to bleed over into that. I'm not sure, but that, you know, sort of going off of what I mentioned last week with maybe this could be NXT's Bullet Club, but then Bullet Club was so associated with Prince Devitt, and hopefully I'm pronouncing that one correctly, and then he goes to WWE, and then it becomes so associated with AJ Styles, and then he goes to WWE, and now it's so associated, of course, with the Bucks and Omega and Cody. So they can make those transitions, but they can be hard transitions too. So I'm wondering if Cole is that right now, where it might be difficult to transition Undisputed Era to the next phase post Cole, assuming there even is one.
It was Prince Devitt.
It's not Devitt. Okay.
No, it was Devitt.
All right. Okay. And the Kona thing. I guess I'm forgiving of it just because WWE kind of has a formula that they want their entrances to go by. Speaking of Finn Balor, I will always remember that video of him practicing at, I think it was at a, I don't know, whatever behind the scenes thing it was, practicing all the different spots that he has to hit. And he's walking down with Triple H like, okay, then I'll go here and wait for the music to do this. And then I'll go here and do this pose and the camera will be there. And they're just plotting all of it out. And there are only so many different positions you can hold your body in these choreographed little spots. So, you know, if that's his thing, I'm fine with it.
And as Frank Catani kind of suggested, everything's a little bit derivative. It is very hard. So,
yeah.
And NXT is the ground where you're trying to find out what's yours and what's not. So I'm a lot less worried about it right now than I would be later. So anyway, that was that match. That was Undisputed Era and the stuff they got going on, obviously setting up the Dunn Ricochet match for next week, which we won't talk about really here because we're going to talk about it a lot next week. So we had two enhancement matches. Let's get to one. One was a rematch, I think, between Lars Sullivan and Raul Mendoza, and the other was Shayna Baszler against Violet Payne. Violet Payne is the kind of name that I expect to be one of your emo heroes in a Japanese RPG. That's literally what I expect that name to be. It's just the most generic. I don't know. Hopefully they got a better name in mind if she's going to stick around. Or maybe that's what she wants to be. So anyway, Shayna against Violet Payne. I assume that this is to set up Shayna's rematch. Lars Sullivan against Raul Mendoza. And who knows what the point of that is. Lars winning here with no feud in sight almost makes me want to say, is he the attacker? I don't know. On Lars and on Shayna, Justin, what have you got?
Lars and Shayna, when Raul Mendoza finally gets a win, the crowd is going to pop hard.
I would like that to come at the hands of somebody big. Like, in this match, yeah. That would have been huge. Yeah.
Like,
1-2-3 kid thing.
That's exactly. I think that's where they're headed. Wait, because they keep giving him these matches, and in each match, he shows more and more fire. He gets more and more minutes. Like, and you could have hurt Lars Sullivan by giving him this match was over 4 minutes, and you could have hurt Lars Sullivan by letting this match go on 4 minutes. And if it had been any other jobber other than Cassius Ohno, 4 minutes definitely hurts Lars Sullivan because of how he's been built up as like this total squash machine. But Raul Mendoza's matches are getting longer and longer. So it's building the storyline of Mendoza is getting closer and closer to being not enhancement talent. And that's a cool little storyline they've been building up without saying a thing. And remember, this was a rematch, right? It wasn't really a rematch. It's just that Raul Mendoza just got beat up for no reason last week. I think that's cool. I like what they're doing with him. Lars Sullivan, I like his squashes a lot. I don't know how I feel about his longer matches. Shayna versus Violet Payne, perfectly fine for what it was. I enjoyed it. I think that Violet Payne spent way too long not tapping out when she should have.
I actually thought this is the first time during this show I thought 1-2-3 kid, because I was like, is she a bigger deal than I know? Like, is this non-tap going to mean something? And then, no, it was just so Shayna could lay on some more punishment.
Yeah, it just took way too long for her to tap out. But I really liked how Rinaldo was just like, please tap out, just tap out. You got to tap out.
Right.
That I thought Rinaldo built up Baszler so well there. So that's my thoughts. I mean, it's two squash matches. I'm going to find something to like about it.
Right. Tom, anything on either of those?
Yeah, I guess that was to give Shayna to rebuild some credibility between title matches. I thought it was a little odd that there wasn't much more to it than that. Maybe just hearing the commentary helped frame that. With the Lars thing, I particularly liked it because it really is a reintroduction to his character after he'd been away for a while. And the reason I liked this match so much is because it reminded me of what a lot of matches on Mid-South TV were. And you know, again, I always mention like, and other wrestling shows of that era, but Mid-South is the one, that's my reference point. Like I could hear somebody saying like, this match is scheduled for 10 minutes or remaining TV time, and it totally would have fit in with what this match was. And you know, I agree, and with the Mendoza thing and 1-2-3 kid absolutely came to mind. But when you hear Mendoza's music, it's kind of like, I know this is just going to be a squash, but I was absolutely sold on it because it gave Lars the opportunity to remind me why I liked him in the first place before he started having longer matches. So it was extremely effective for me. In that regard, it did exactly what it was supposed to do. So I was definitely in favor of this.
It seems a little like a rebuild on the order of Baron Corbin, where they started doing his 30-second squashes and things like that. And I'm not like this huge Baron backer or anything. I think he's about seeing the height of what he can do on the main roster. But there's no denying that 30-second count-along really, really rebuilt him. And it seems like that's kind of the reclamation project they're doing here. And Lars has spent some time off TV because he was hurt. And then he was exposed in various ways. And now they're just trying to figure out how best to use his... I mean, he's a freak of nature. He is. He's not built like anyone else. I guess he's somewhat close to the build of
Mojo Rawley,
of a Braun Strowman or a Mojo, sure. The where he's got all that upper body strength. It seems like there could be money there if he's used properly. I think his ceiling is like Kane, and I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that as like this guy could be really, really valuable to have around for years if they utilize him to the best of their ability.
And Kane is an enormous success. I mean, if somebody ever compared me to being the Kane of my industry,
yeah,
I take that as the greatest possible compliment.
Yeah, you're not in a position to be the one selling the tickets a lot, but you're super, super – like wrestling is littered with a lot of guys who at 15, 20 years, they were – you know, and I joke with this term a lot, but I just call them the unbeatable monster who always gets beat, because there has to be one on hand, and if that person can continue to keep their heat, then it doesn't matter. And Kane – however that happened, usually was able to do that. He had his lean times, but had a really great career. And I say had, but it's not technically even over. He's mayor now, but he had a pretty good career. So
you love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Let's move on to an email from JB. Hello, team. With it being made official this week that Renee Young will be a full-time member of the booth for Raw, from here forward, it got me thinking. When and if do you think that NXT will get a female announcer in the broadcast booth? To add this question, who do you think might be a few good options if and when this occurs? A few names that immediately pop into my head would be Kathy Kelly and or Beth Phoenix, as she has and is currently assisting with the Mae Young Classic. Look forward to hearing your thoughts, and as always, love the show. I think that Beth is kind of intended to be a special attraction. I don't know that there's any plans. I mean, who knows? Maybe Beth has done this twice now and got the gotten the bug to do it, but I guess I would just be really surprised by that. To me, somebody young and who went into broadcasting without becoming a wrestler, somebody like Kathy Kelly, does make a lot of sense. I really like her work. I feel like she's underutilized, but a lot of times these people who seem underutilized on camera actually have a much more important role backstage doing this or that. So for all I know, she's got a lot more going on. But anyway, I wouldn't mind that. Obviously, the first regular female announcer we ever had on NXT was Renee Young. So she paved that road. I could see that being Kathy Kelly. I don't know if any other names come to mind, but a high five to Renee Young. Love her work and wish Raw was better right now for her to call. But whatever. It'll be better at some point. Any other names jump out at you guys?
Beth Phoenix is a special attraction for me, too. You know, we heard her announce at the Women's Royal Rumble. I think that's what the event was, wasn't it? Women's Royal Rumble?
That was Stephanie. Well, Stephanie did Mixed Match Challenge Rumble. And something else.
What did we hear Beth announcing besides the Mae Young class?
Well, she did last year's Mae Young also, right?
That was Lita. Phoenix has done the Mixed Match Challenge and this year's Mae.
Okay, so it was Mixed Match that I watched actually more than I thought that I was going to.
Yeah,
of the Mixed Match Challenge.
Beth Phoenix has this natural personality where she works very well on the mic in the booth. She just does. She doesn't need to be fed lines. She has a natural personality of her own. So I was just always such a big fan of her work. So Phoenix.
Oh yeah, huge fan here too.
Yeah, Beth Phoenix would just be cool in general. And part of that selfishness, because I want to see Beth Phoenix involved in NXT any way, anyhow they can get her. She could sink in the booth, and if that means that she's spending time in the PC, great. You know,
that's just how Edge I feel. To move out of the woods.
Right. Yeah, is that where he's hiding?
Mountains in North Carolina, and he films Vikings over in or whatever. He's always posting beautiful sceneries on Instagram. Like, this is today's office. I'm sure that they can, you know, they probably have caretakers for their kids when they're both working. But yeah, if she was going to move down here, he'd have to pull that boy out of the woods.
Gotcha. So besides Beth Phoenix, Trish Stratus, one can hope.
Maybe. I don't know. I remember when early on she was like seriously the low person on the totem pole as far as ability to talk, but that came along as did her ability to wrestle. She was to me one of the huge surprise success stories, just huge surprises. So not surprised they pushed her, surprised that she became very good at what she did. But yeah, I guess I could see that as well.
She'd be a very big special attraction, and that's a lot of it to me. Yeah. Is that she would definitely get some eyes on product.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, as far as developing new talent on commentary, to be honest, JB's suggestion of Kathy Kelly is the only one that really comes to mind. And I could list off other names, but I would really just be saying, like, here's a list of the other names of people that they have on the microphone. So doing backstage segments and whatnot. But Kathy Kelly's the one that stands out as like, if I had to pick somebody to try out in that spot, it would be her.
For sure. All right, Andrew Gamble emails, hey guys, not really a question, more of a talking point, so please reformat this to make it flow better. WWE video games have their real flaws, but I'm always interested in the new additions to the roster, particularly with the addition of NXT and who's missing. I went on WWE's website under the NXT roster and made a list of their website roster, but not the games roster. I excluded new debuts like Keith Lee and Forgotten Sons because there was no realistic way for them to be included. I made a note of who will probably be downloadable content and who could potentially be there. Just take some time and talk about who wasn't included and what their value to NXT is. All right, these are the ones that are on the NXT roster that aren't in the video game. Aaliyah, Candice LeRae, Caesar Bononi, Dakota Kai, Danny Burch, EC3, Fabian Aichner, Hansen, Kona Reeves, Lacey Evans, Raul Mendoza, Ricochet, Riddick Moss, Rowe, Tainara Conti, Tino Sabatelli, Trent Seven, and Vanessa Bourne. The surprises here, the only ones that would qualify as surprises were probably signed later. So your Ricochet, your Hansen and Rowe, a few of those could be downloadable content. Dakota not being on there does not make me happy, but she could be downloadable content too. For a few of these, this is just a hazard of their placement on the roster. Like with your Sabatelli and your and Moss, who kind of it seemed like they had somewhere to go with those guys, and now they've faded into the background once again. Aaliyah, who's been on the bottom a lot. Vanessa Bourne, who has not won on TV, I don't think, or except for like an enhancement match or two. Then Trent Seven, I guess, could be maybe a surprise, but I don't know. I know for a while he was not contracted. He was doing the UK stuff, so I don't know what the plan there is either. So I'm not sure if there are any major surprises. I know you guys – I play a ton of video games. I don't play WWE video games just because, as he said, they haven't been great in a while. But yeah, I guess that's kind of interesting who is and is not on that list. Any surprises for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I also don't play the games anymore, but selfishly, I'd like to see Lacey Evans. I would be shocked if we didn't see EC3 and Ricochet added in like an NXT downloadable package. The big shocker is not on Andrew's list, unless he knows something that I don't, that Tommaso Ciampa is not in the game, or at least he hasn't been announced. I think they've announced the full roster now. I know they did the whole reveal that I did not watch, but Ciampa's not in the game, and he came back in January, and he's been in the main event ever since. So It's quite an omission. He had a tweet saying
like
something.
A funny character thing where he could be they told them not to put me in.
He did. He tweeted saying something like, I don't have the tweet up right now, but he said something like, I don't lose, so I'm not going to go into a video game where you're going to control me and maybe make me lose. Or no. He said, like, even in a virtual environment, I never lose, so it wouldn't be fair to put me in the game or something to those terms. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah, maybe he does know something you don't know. But yeah, I didn't know about that. Okay, so we had two more emails from Patrick Alog and from Jeff, who I don't know has emailed us. These are longish. Well, Patrick's isn't so bad. Hey, guys, has Raul Mendoza ever won on NXT TV? No. Even if he has, is he the best NXT wrestler with a losing record? With a losing record? I'm not sure. With an only losing record? Absolutely. Are the Forgotten Sons supposed to be heels because their video package looked pretty awesome and made them look like baby faces? The promo from Dakota, Deanna, Aaliyah, and Lacey Evans looked pretty horrible. It reminded me of the surprise acting situations that would happen during the team ride at Universal Studios. I'd rather have them do the setup at the gym instead in front of quote-unquote fans. And the main event was incredible, as both Nikki and Bianca's character work were incredible. The clash of styles reminded me of Velveteen and Aleister. I think Nikki brought out the best in Bianca. I'd love to see a takeover match between these two, and I'm glad the rivalry is not finished. Patrick Alog from Green Bay. Yeah, obviously we talked about that match. Haven't talked about the backstage women's segment yet. When this stuff happens in front of fake fans, it always does kind of have an air of falsity to it. It always looks a little silly. The Forgotten Sons. I don't know. I guess I forgot to write down the thing about the Forgotten Sons, which I guess is fitting given their name. I literally forgot to write them down. So that bit was, it seemed like a Ford commercial on the Super Bowl. Like that. That was what I took away from this. It seemed like they were saying a lot of semi-meaningful manly man stuff. I don't know where they're going with this.
1,500 pounds of heavy machinery.
Yes, for me, this could work. This could work almost on a heelish level with them trying to be so much bigger than they are. I don't know what the plan is for these guys. This could go face or heel in wildly different directions. Face in exactly the way that Patrick is seeing it, kind of as this this redemption story, which I see. I do see, but me disliking it in kind of this commercial formulaic manner that we'll have to see where it diverges from here, because they can't do more than one or two more promos like this and not have it just be utterly irritating. So on the four women in the back and the Forgotten Sons, Justin, what do you have?
The Forgotten Sons thing, I was like, okay, they're in a junkyard. They step in mud piles, puddles. This came off as very heelish to me. You're asking me to boo characters who are being presented as veterans. And, well, I'm not – maybe I'm not as automatically – the fact that somebody's a veteran doesn't automatically put them as, like, a cut above in my book. I'm just trying to think of a good way to put it. You know what I'm saying? I know that sometimes puts me out of step with greater society and or
I know what you're
the WWE audience.
I've worked with people who were very upset when they got leapfrogged by people who have been there shorter, and it's like, well, they're bringing more to the table in every way. So when somebody just preaches, I've been here, this is what I do, and it's like, okay, do you do it well? So, like, even from a character standpoint, it's like, I don't care that you've been here if I've not learned your name and you've not been on TV and all that. It's just, it comes off as whiny. So if the intent is
it's not just
inspiring,
but they're supposed to be military veterans.
Oh, I didn't even realize that's what you meant.
I'm referring to their status as military veterans.
Okay.
And it's like, so take my personal feelings where I don't automatically put military veteran, you know, I respect them, I appreciate them, but, like, for example, I'm not just going to automatically hire a veteran over someone who never served simply because they're a veteran, right? That's just not the way I think.
Right.
But still, asking me to boo veterans where they're making a deal out of their veteran status, to me, that is just such a bad business decision. It's a bad business decision. And I think this was a heelish promo. It was a heelish vignette. The way they talked in Regal's office, it was heelish. Because we just had this conversation about Cassius Ohno. Cassius Ohno could be the fourth member of Forgotten Sons.
Yeah, that's true.
Because this is his exact same shit. I've been here and I was supposed to be hot stuff and I've been overlooked. That's exactly what their complaint is. That's exactly what they said to William Regal in his office with his Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels lawyer lookalike in the office. And it's like, it's heelish. It's a heelish thing. I've been overlooked. It's heelish. So, not a fan.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
What was the other one that you were asking me about besides Forgotten Sons?
The ladies.
The ladies. Oh God, what a bad segment this was. Starting from that fake thing was like it was like the setup to an EC3 segment. I actually thought it was an EC3 segment. Like, hey, fake fans, tell us about your fake fandom. Oh, look, here's EC3 to shower you with money and free T-shirts. It was so lame. And then we don't know what was said, but it just came off as one of those, like, 2008 Raw, you stole my hairbrush. Oh, yeah, well, you used my makeup to decorate your locker with. Let's have a championship match. That's what this felt like. It was that argument. Where they said, hey, go watch some Kelly promos and take it from there.
Tom, on these two segments.
Forgotten Sons, the segment didn't do much for me, but yeah, I think although I'm not going to say that they're going to do it at Kurt Angle's level, they are in a position where they have to do the Kurt Angle thing of taking something that is just so widely respected in America. It's just an automatic, like, you're a veteran, you're an Olympic medalist, like, you, that's automatic respect wherever you go. And they're going to have to be really twerpy and irritating to get over his heels. And with the little bit that I've seen of Cutler so far, and the lot of bit that we saw from Wesley Blake in the Blake and Murphy tag team, if there's one thing those guys are good at, it's being really irritating, especially in the Blake and Murphy tag team. I said that Blake was probably the best heel in NXT at the time because I just hated that guy so much. And like every little ounce of what he did was going towards making me dislike him. So hopefully they can. I don't know. I guess hopefully they can get over it. Although I would agree that the aesthetics are cool-ish. Again, this particular video didn't do much for me, but you know, the biker gang thing. I like cool leather jackets too. I like checking out abandoned buildings and whatnot because they look neat. So there's cool, ostensibly cool stuff in the video. And I'm not sure if that really reflects WWE's dissonance between what we want to see in babyface characters and what we're actually seeing in babyface characters and whatnot. I'm not sure if that's really an example of this, but it definitely could be flipped face very easily, I suppose. As far as the women's segment, oh boy. I've mentioned on the podcast before that I went to Full Sail for film, and the Full Sail Live was not there at the time. The building that they filmed this in was not Full Sail at the time. It was just a big strip mall, and the part where I attended classes it had all been bought up and turned into classrooms and whatnot. And over the years, Full Sail has systematically bought up all of the other places in the strip mall, except for like a Firehouse Subs or something, and turned it into Full Sail. And so that's where Full Sail Live comes in. And this room that they were in is a lobby that is in the next area over from Full Sail Live. Where the camera is facing at the beginning of that video is where we line up before the events, like right outside that window. You need a pass card or code or whatever it is to get into the lobby. And you see, like, that's where I see a lot of the wrestlers entering, is because they enter through that lobby. But students have pass codes too. I would not be surprised if those, you know, schools in session when NXT is happening, students are around. It is a school. So I wouldn't be surprised if those fake fans were actually just students that were using the lobby for what it's intended to be used for, just hanging out or they were in a study group or whatever it may have been. And this NXT camera crew walks up like, hey, we're just going to randomly list a bunch of names off to you. And can you like act like you're reacting to them? This group of fans or people seemed like they had no idea what these names were that were being listed off. And the worst part about it was when there starts to be a commotion, whoever's operating the camera starts going, huh, what? Is there something going on behind me? There's something going on behind me. Huh, what? I better turn around and see what it is. It was just awful. Like first time ever untrained actor kind of stuff. And I think, you know, more than anything, though, we've been outspoken on the podcast about lauding how good NXT backstage segments tend to be and how creative they can be, especially when they expand the world to places like the Performance Center and locker rooms and whatnot. The Full Sail backstage area, like this lobby, is just so awkward to me. And they've done EC3 segments there. They've done Undisputed Era segments there. They've now done this. And I just don't think it works as a setting. And it doesn't even look like it's supposed, even though it is legitimately part of what can be considered their backstage area, I don't think they should present it that way. I don't think they should use it. Because it just looks and sounds weird and bad.
All right. So a weird segment, but we will get a tag team match out of it that will probably be pretty good. Okay, so we have one more email left. This is from Jeff. He had a lot of thoughts. We're going to go ahead and read it because we did surprisingly decent on time, I've got to say, considering how many emails we had. Hey, guys, a couple of questions while watching the show this week. It's great to see Lorcan and Birch back looking impressive. How long do you think before they get stuck in a feud with Heavy Machinery? I'm kidding, of course. What other teams do you see them in potential feuds with? How great is Ciampa's new music to go with an emphatic statement? The lyrics are singing to his character and bringing a new edge to his sadistic cockiness. Ciampa is staying on the gas pedal, and his reign as champion just feels so special. Do you see a long reign for Ciampa? Also, did you catch the reference to Edge and Christian with the nerd voice mimic of Edge? It's time for Shayna to go main roster after her rematch. When she's focused, she's incredibly intense, something sorely needed. NXT can survive her promotion. Oh, wait, not a promotion, but it's a lateral move. Great Undisputed Era promo. I get a kick out of Bobby Fish's little comments and not being able to throw the hand signs up. It's a fun touch. Is he coming back soon? He's been on the shelf for a while. Some days you're the bug. Some days you're the windshield. Morrow is on form tonight. Raul was showing some good skills, but maybe Lars should take the theatrics down a notch and go for pins quicker. As impressive as Lars is, he still has a ways to go. Good Ricochet promo. He looks tailor-made to have a championship. Some guys make a championship, and some guys need a championship to make them. It's great to see Ricochet excel in NXT. The Forgotten Sons promo was well done, but I'm just not feeling it with these guys. There's something missing in the Sanity outfits. Cassius Ohno, where the hell has this been on NXT? It's about time to get a bit more Chris Hero attitude in there. If only this goes somewhere for him, he's more than earned it. Bianca and Nikki, good match, but very meh ending, but pulled it back in the post-match activities. As long as this ends up a takeover, they could steal the show. How great was Nikki swiping at butterflies before starting the match? Have a great night, guys. Jeff from Waukesha, Wisconsin. Okay, I don't know about Nikki swiping at butterflies, but I'd like the match, and they could steal the show, but they have not done a non-title women's match on TakeOver in a while. They've not done that many, period, but they haven't done any for a while. We agree on Forgotten Sons. There's something okay about it. There's also something missing, and I don't know. Hopefully hopefully this is early and like another veteran who found her way, they will be able to figure out what exactly they need out of these guys and what they're going to be. Bobby Fish's little comments, nice. And I believe timetable wise, he should be back soon. And as far as Ciampa's long reign, I don't know. I think that Ciampa could have been an audible. We don't know, but he's got the championship now, and he's doing such a great job with it. One of the best reigns in all of wrestling, and one of the best NXT title reigns there's ever been. Why would you shut it down unless you've got an extremely good reason? With our last email here, Justin, anything on what Jeff brought up?
Not really. I think that we've covered most of this over the show already. I just in general, I like where things are going. The one thing I'd like to point out is I think it's amazing that after, I think it's now 3 years, Bobby Fish has finally gotten over those stupid NXT trophies.
Those, what, the NXT trophies? What?
The Slammies.
Oh, the Slammies.
The NXT version of Slammies, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And Bobby Fish.
Cesaro Bononi, rising star.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bobby Fish has finally done something useful with it.
Right.
Used it as a prop in backstage segments and made funny facial expressions due to the fact that he's holding it in his hand. There's just a lot. I know that we've talked about this, but dispute era is just fine as is. They don't need it.
We're starting to lose Justin a little bit here. I don't know if Tom, you're losing
members
as well.
They don't need old members.
Yeah, it's a mostly agreeable email. I'm glad I'm not the only one that. Silly stuff. It reminded me, though, that I forgot to mention that Ciampa, they cut away from it, but after he swiped that that sign from the fan who was either just a plant or both a plant and a Make-A-Wish kid, I'm not sure, he brought the sign in the ring and lumbar checked it.
Did I lose you guys?
At the kid. It was pretty vicious.
Okay, well, tech difficulties happen every now and then. We will have our crack team assemble these two pieces together. We've lost Tom for the night, so Justin and I are just going to quick sign off. I think we kind of covered everything anyway, and if we forgot anything, we'll forget to talk about it next week, too. So this is Kelly Wells. Thank you for listening to PWT Talks NXT. Justin, who are you?
I am Justin _M_James at Twitter.
All right. And I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me at Spooky Milk. Harley can be found at Talking Honor. And Tom can be found at Tom Staup. Thank you. And we'll see you next week. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan,
all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.